Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 112. On this week's show, we are going to review Thor Ragnarok. Joining me all over the globe is none other than Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
From the wild mountains of the Carolinas is Miss Courtney, Mrs. Courtney Van Rens. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
And the sailor himself, the Main Street Gazette's own Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Pete. And say hello. No music. No music this week, as I am calling in from a hotel from parts unknown. So we're not going to be having any music intro this week. We're just going to start by telling you that this episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, witnessing Ragnarok, possibly from a spaceship or from Earth, or saving Ragnarok from ever happening. Contact the great people, the experts, over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. And, you know, even though there's no music, you should go over and check out Pogo's tracks. You can find the bevy of those over at soundcloud.com/PogoMix. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. And if you're already in the group, you can add your friends to it. If you're not in the group, you can add yourself to it. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And Melissa, there's other places that people can find us. And where those are, you can tell them.
I can. You can find us on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And you can help support our show if you go to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour.
And Ryan, where can everyone find you and the Main Street Gazette?
They can find it at mainstgazette.com is the main site. If you're looking for us on Twitter or Instagram, it's mainstgazette. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you'll find our page.
And Courtney, everyone can find you in the group and whatnot, right? That's a good way of sort of seeing what you're up to.
Yep, just search me out.
All right, guys. Well, there's everybody. Here we are, and we're here on a Monday night to discuss the biggest, most recent release from Marvel Studios, of course, that being Thor Ragnarok, the third film in the Thor series. So you know what? Before we even get into Thor Ragnarok, I really would like to ask everyone, what did you think of the first two Thor films? Because I think that the what we find and what we experience in Thor Ragnarok has a lot to do with people's reactions to the first two films, whether they be positive or negative. Maybe lukewarm is the most common reaction whenever I ask people about the first two films. So, Melissa, I'm pretty sure you come from a more positive standpoint on the previous films. Did you like the first film, which was just titled Thor, which Kenneth Branagh, which, hey guys, if you're ever wondering where all this ridiculously phenomenal casting came from, tip of the cap to Kenneth Branagh and everything he did in the first film. And then Thor: The Dark World. So, Melissa, what did you think of those when you saw them and consequently rewatched them since?
I really liked the first Thor. I thought it was fun. I thought it added like a really unique element to the Marvel universe that we hadn't seen before, because now you got like your quote unquote aliens, you know, entering. And I liked the humor that was in it and the brevity of, you know, Thor being on Earth. With Thor: The Dark World, I felt that it wasn't as good as the first one, because I felt like they got caught up in things that made them stumble a little bit. But there were really good parts. Like, I liked when him and Loki had the jokes. Like, when that, you know, brevity came back, I really enjoyed that. But the villain, I don't know, it was a little weak, and I didn't care for Natalie Portman in that movie that much.
Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag for me as well. I really did appreciate the first Thor. You know, you got the Norse mythology and how it ties in. There are pieces that tie in well to other films around it. It's that first kind of cosmic view of the Marvel Universe. This pre-Guardians, this pre-all of that. And then the second one just felt like it fell flat. I mean, you know, I want to have nice things to say about it, but it as a whole, it's probably the Marvel movie that I avoid the most.
Okay, my bottom would be Iron Man 2, but yeah, that's
it's close. Yeah, there's a couple that are right there, but yeah, there's an argument to be made.
Courtney, how about you?
I love the first one. I was a big fan, and I still am. I rewatched it this weekend and loved it just as much as I did the first time. Super enjoyable. Again, I love all the humor, like everybody else said. I thought that was, you know, kind of the best part of that movie, and that is, in my opinion, one of Chris Hemsworth's biggest strengths. So it was smart to allow that in the first one. And then, you know, we see that come back. And then in the second one, it's kind of disappointing because you have Chris Eccleston, who, if you're a Doctor Who fan, you probably love. And that did not turn out to be what you would hope it would be. So yeah, I agree that the relationships in the second one became this like convoluted mess, and it ended up being more about that and then not well developed versions of that than about, you know, the great stuff that we had about the first movie.
Yeah, for me, I really enjoyed the first Thor movie. It felt very akin to Richard Donner's Superman, and a lot of like the way it was looked, maybe a little too many Dutch angles just from a filming standpoint, which is kind of a weird thing, but. The first, you know, I would say, 40% of the film when we're on Asgard was my favorite portions of the film. We do kind of get the fish out of water where, you know, Thor's stripped of his powers after we just meet him, which, I know a lot of people had a little problem with that. It was like, oh, now we're just following this guy around New Mexico, which is not really the most interesting visual town of the world. But I really liked it. The Thor Dark World was a misfire. It had all the elements there, but see, it wasn't Natalie Portman really that threw me off too much in that film. I like Natalie Portman. It was the over leaning on, oh God, I can't remember her name. She's from Two Broke Girls.
Yeah.
Kat Dennings.
Mm-hmm. Kat Dennings. Leaning on her for all the comedy relief, seemingly, in that film for like the last 30 minutes just wasn't, I don't know, just not what I wanted out of that movie at all. The Thor and Loki parts are always the best parts of the film, it seems like. I think that tradition kind of continues in a positive manner in Ragnarok as well. But I wanted more out of that. Eccleston is wasted. As many Marvel villains are wasted on phenomenal actors because they're just sort of twirling their mustache, giving their monologues, and that's it. So with that in mind, with everything that was going on with those films, they did sort of start to introduce a more goofy Thor with the interaction of Hulk and him in the Avengers films. And then we had these great little short films about what Thor did during Civil War, which really like introduced us to that Thor at the time. But during that whole time, this is actually what was going on. If I know correctly from the timelines, this is basically what Thor was busy with during Civil War, and this is why also Hulk was not around. And we get this very, very different take by director, and I'm going to say his name wrong because I always do. Taika Waititi, is that right?
Taika, yeah.
Taika. So you may know him from his previous films, What We Do in the Shadows, which is kind of a huge cult hit. Hunt for the Wilder People was a bit more of a, I wouldn't say mainstream success, but it got him more like attention. It definitely got the attention of other people, like, oh, he can do more than, you know, just silly. He can also, you know, craft a film around silly. And of course, he was, you know, he directed the Flight of the Conchord series for a couple of years and all that stuff. Something else I just want to bring up is just the director of photography, which is Javier Aguirre-Sorobe. He did The Others, The Road, and Blue Jasmine with Cate Blanchett. So this is a bit of a different film for him, you know, as a DP. And I think that the first thing that you noticed probably when the trailers came out was the visual palette and the tone of Thor Ragnarok. So with that in mind, let's talk about Thor Ragnarok. We're not going to discuss spoilers until later. We will say, like, when we're going to discuss some spoilers. I would say this isn't a movie that has many spoilers. Unfortunately, I think the biggest spoiler we knew going in, and I would have loved to have not known, the involvement of the Hulk in the film, because could you just imagine if we didn't have that knowledge? Granted, there. As soon as he landed on, Sakaar, my brain would have went, "Oh my God, where are we?" And I would have probably ran out of the theater screaming, because thinking like they're not going to do this. But what do you think about that? Actually, would you have wanted to not know, Courtney? In particular, what if you didn't know? Would the movie still appeal to you? Because obviously, that was a big thing to get people who maybe weren't that excited about another Thor film to get them on board. Like, oh my God, he's going to fight the Hulk in an arena, you know. But if you didn't know that, what would your excitement level for this film have been following Dark World?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best person to ask, because Thor is my personal favorite of all of them. So I was going to be excited regardless of, I mean, they could have put him in a paper bag and just been like, here, it's Thor again. And I would have been like, yes. it wouldn't have mattered at all to me. But I do think if they had hidden the Hulk from us, I think a lot of that comedy that we end up getting in the film would have been, I mean, it was already great, but it would have been more exciting. And I think those lines would have hit a little bit harder. But yeah, I still would have been excited, but I think that, yeah, it would have been cool to have that reveal.
Yeah. Like, Ryan, could you imagine if you sat down and, you know, he breaks through the door and we get that line about he's a friend from work. If we would have got that, like, totally unknown, I think the theater would have exploded.
Knowing that exactly as you had said, when you land on the planet, you're like, wait, is this Planet Hulk? Are we getting Planet Hulk? Like, it would have been phenomenal. You would have, obviously, in all the marketing leading up to it, you would have had a lot more leaning on Hela and that, you know, and almost presented as this more serious film going in to have gotten away with this, or more of Jeff Goldblum. I'm not sure how you would have, you know, which way you would have run with the marketing on that. But that would have been an insane thing to be able to pull off and not have it leak out.
Yeah, I think the fact that they did the reveal for the Hulk part in the previews is what helped, because the whole tone of this movie felt to me like they were trying to recapture that first Thor, where it was like, look, it's funny, it's lighthearted, like, yeah, there's stuff going on, but, like, you know, it's not the Dark World. And I think if they had leaned too much on Hela, it would have felt maybe too much Dark World, and I don't know if you would have gotten as many people out there on opening weekend as you did. I mean, you can't really, like, take the comedy out, because I think it is so heavily saturated, but I don't know if, like, promoting it, like, if it was, like, a darker film or a less serious film, like, I don't know, it would have been weird.
I'm just gonna, because I heard now a couple of you guys say this, and I don't agree. I didn't think the first Thor movie was a comedy, by any means. There's a couple of jokes, but it's not a comedy.
No, I just felt it was a little bit more lighthearted, maybe because the comedy works so much better in Thor 1 than it did in Thor 2, that, like, I'm classifying Thor 1 as more, like, jokey or laughy.
Yeah. Yeah, because the whole first half when he's in Asgard, that's pretty Shakespearean serious stuff going on. There's no jokes going on.
No, and I agree with that, which makes sense. You have Kenneth Branagh, who has done all these incredible, you know, Shakespeare. He did Othello, which is one of my favorite Shakespeare films of all time. Like, you have that kind of pedigree, so there is much more of a Shakespearean element to it.
Yeah,
but then you also get the... You also get the, like, slapstick elements too, though, with, you know, she hits him with the car twice and then, you know, he throws the mug. And I mean, those are the moments that, like, there's a handful of them. I wouldn't say that overall it's a comedy, but you get a handful of good, like, good laughs.
Yeah, they're good. And that's the key. And there's so much more in there. And even, like, the parts where he's in Asgard in the beginning, like, if I remember correctly, like, yeah, it was, like, Shakespearean, but even Shakespeare, like, had his lighthearted moments. So when he's joking around with, you know, the Warriors 3 and stuff, like, I don't know, there was just, like, a camaraderie. I don't know, it just went so much better.
Okay, I just want to clear up that, like, Thor was not a comedy. That's the only thing, like, because it's just not. It's not a comedy. There's the fish out of water humor in the second half, but that film is not aimed to be a comedy by any means, even though it's got some funny parts. So this film, when we saw the trailers, when we saw the tone that continued from those shorts, this was hard. This was like, no, this is going to be silly. Like, this is going to be a little camp. We're aware of it. We're going to make the graphics look like it. We're going to make the music have a feel to it. So, Melissa, when you saw those trailers, did that get you more interested, or did you find it so conflicting to what all the other Marvel films overall? Because Guardians is a comedy, you know, action film, but this seemed to be definitely a couple of steps beyond that kind of comedy.
I mean,
were you comfortable with that?
I was comfortable with it. I also, though, only watched like that first trailer, and I didn't watch any of the other ones, so I can't really say that the trailers, you know, swayed me one way or the other. But after that first trailer, I was in. I was ready. Like, I'm like Courtney. I don't care. Like, I want to go see a good Thor movie.
Okay, so what did you think of the movie then, Mel? Melissa? I said it by accident, and that's what it is. But it sounded worse when I tried to fix it.
It did. I really, really liked this movie. I had a great time. I loved it from beginning to end.
Was there anything that didn't work for you in it?
Carl Urban was a little weird. For me, his character was a little weird. I felt like they wanted to do more with him than he did. And the only other one would be maybe I felt like Valkyrie didn't get enough of an arc. Like, she was better than Carl Urban's character, but I felt like they could have used her a little bit better.
Ryan, following up on Mel's, you know, thought on Melissa, my God, it's so weird. I also kind of felt that Carl Urban Scourge was sort of, he was not used very much, but then he also had like the most dramatic turn of anyone in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, even the twists and turns of other characters, which we won't get into, you know, they happen and you're like, understandable. But his was very, very, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, because, you know, but he has a couple of character turns, and I don't know. I just, he does seem like there's something missing from that character's whole place in the film.
There does. It seems like there's either backstory missing, there is development along the way, other than he, you know, a few looks that you get from him here or there.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel like they fleshed it out as, or there are scenes on a cutting room floor somewhere that fleshed him out that we didn't get to see.
Maybe.
And I could go the same way with Valkyrie. Like, we got a great backstory throughout the film, but it kind of felt like the rationale for some of the turns there as well, it weren't fully realized.
So what was your reaction to the film in its whole?
I wanted to turn around and buy another ticket and watch it again.
Well, that says pretty much. Now, Courtney, I know you know you're a big fan of the director. So this was sort of maybe, you know, something that even got your attention even more. So knowing his previous work and knowing, you know, the sense of humor he does have, and having that injected into the Marvel Universe, which, I mean, I'll totally say, like, I don't want all these films to be the same. The homogenization of tone in all of these films is not something that I ever want to see. So the change was welcomed for me. How was it for you, though? How did you react to Ragnarok?
I absolutely loved it. And I think it was interesting to be in the theater with people who aren't necessarily familiar with Taika Waititi, because the moments that I think I laughed hardest were the moments where the audience didn't necessarily know how to take it. But I love that about Taika Waititi. That's why I love those movies, those awkward, like, those pauses where you're like, oh, and then it just goes on a little longer. And, you know, that's what I love about it. And I love that infused into the movie. I loved it overall. I mean, we'll get into Hella later, but that gave me life. I absolutely loved it.
And I'll say, for Courtney, we went and saw it with our spouses together this weekend. And there were a couple of times where, like, the four of us were laughing, and there was nobody else in the theater.
We had a lively crowd. The theater we were on, that we were in, they were on point. I had a woman cackling, maybe a bit too loudly next to me, but she seemed to be having a great time. I also want to point out to anyone who sees it, Watiti also does voice one of the characters in the film, Korg, who you may be reading is kind of steals like every scene he's in. It's pretty accurate. It's a pretty accurate thing. But for me, I dug the hell out of the film. I really did. This is now right underneath Winter Soldier for me, for the Marvel films. And reasons going are this. And then we're going to, we can give our general thoughts, which is pretty much what we just did. We're going to talk about spoilers, and that's pretty wrap up from there. I don't, as I was saying before, I don't want to see the same film over and over and over again. And if you read comics, there's a great Hawkeye series by Matt Fraction that is completely out of character, almost not character, but out of the tone and stuff of the larger books that he then appears in. He's in his own thing when he has his, Matt Fraction was writing his books, and they were fantastic.
Is that the one with the dog?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And a lot of people saying bro, which is Russian mobsters saying bro to each other. It's phenomenal. So, but then when the larger events come in and Hawkeye is part of the team and it's, a different writer and a different tone, he fits right in. It's no problem. And I think that's exactly what they're going for with this idea. We were having a conversation on the page and someone was like, I think they were just trying to be Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't think that's an accurate statement at all, because that's ignoring the director's work like completely. And it's also not like Guardians of the Galaxy's humor. It's just not, and if that's true, then Guardians of the Galaxy was just trying to be a funnier, hipper, family friendly Reservoir Dogs, because they use music, just because two things are funny. I don't think exactly they're not always the same. But I really do think this is exactly what the Marvel Universe needed. I really enjoyed Spider-Man, but Spider-Man felt hella safe. They even had to hey, look, Iron Man, look, we are where we are. Do you get it? We're here. And that came off as a little much sometimes in that movie, even though I really liked it. I think it's a great film. This is, I think, way better. Not that they have to pit up against each other, because they came out the same year. But I just absolutely had a blast with it. I think visually it's one of the most attractive films that they've done, which is great, because Guardians was a big step. Guardians 2 was a step in the right direction, and I hope we keep going there.
And don't forget about Doc Strange, because for me, beyond Guardians, that movie visually was amazing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, Doc Strange also did a really great job, but I don't think there was as bad muted colors there.
No,
it's not as bad. It's getting better at that point. Guardians really opens up the range, and this continues that range. And I really hope that this is, something that they do for certain films. They don't have to be like that,
Yeah.
But it's really nice. It's good to have a comic book feel film. I mean, this is very comic book. And the thing is, that term can mean a thousand different things, because Brian Michael Bendis's torso is a comic book. And when you read it, it feels like a comic book, but that's, so there are different ways to say that. Let's just go into the characters really quick. Obviously, Marvel has had their biggest Achilles heel, even for the fans who love every movie, has been their villains. So, Courtney, you were speaking about it just a bit before. Cate Blanchett comes in here as Hela, looking unbelievably good. But did you think that this was a worthwhile villain?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Also, I'm just gonna say it. Cate Blanchett is a smoke show. Like, she looked amazing in this movie. I couldn't handle it. But I mean, yeah, absolutely, she was a worthwhile villain. I don't think anything she does she just does it so well. If she's given a character, not that she really takes poorly written characters too often, but if she's given a character, she really owns it, and she really did in this case, and it was very effective. Maybe not true to the mythology that we have and the history of that, but it was still super effective, and it was definitely entertaining and very interesting.
Ryan, do you agree with Courtney that Blanchett, you know, brought a what? And if you did like her, like, what were the specifics? You know, because again, this is a villain that we're supposed to be worried about, but this is a comedy overall.
Mm. Yeah, and she and it was a little bit more serious when she was around. She did have some really wonderful, like, snide remarks to kind of keep that humor level kind of in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She just did a wonderful job with the character. It was good to see another Asgardian villain that wasn't something that we were gonna, you know, just leave on the flavor of the week kind of thing with the villains. Like, okay, great, done, move on. Like, this is one that has, like, resonance to it with Cate Blanchett's portrayal, and so it was good to have that depth and that something that had a tie and a connection to the larger stories that we're kind of seeing and like the characters.
Melissa, I want to ask you, because you've always been a huge Loki fan, and, you know, obviously Loki's in this film, but I've always been cautious of Loki having too much of the Thor film, you know what I mean? Like, where Batman films, it seems like Batman guest stars when the real star is the villain, you know, the bad guy, the Joker's the villain, the Joker's a star. Bane has, you know, twice as much screen time as Batman, you know, that kind of stuff. Did you like the balance that Loki, you know, once again, whenever he's in there, Hiddleston has become, I would say, under, well, what we hope would be the impact of Thanos, Marvel's villain has kind of been Loki.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, so do you think that they balance it well with bringing him in here, but it's still being a Thor film? And you know what? Apply that question towards the Hulk, too.
I think that neither one of them steal the show over Hulk. I feel like there is a nice balance, but they give Thor enough alone time or time where he's like the main focus that I don't feel like he gets overshadowed. It does feel like they're equivalent, especially the Hulk in certain scenes, but I don't feel like they take up too much screen time, and we're still with Thor so much of it that you still feel like it's a Thor film, not a compilation film. So I think they did a fine job, and I'm actually really happy with Loki's character. It was Thor in the Dark World. I felt like he got a little too tricksy, you know, and like every turn was like, okay, now what is he going to do, you know, like to backstab, or like, is he really going to be truthful? And in this one, I felt like they kind of have now developed him a little bit more. So like, yeah, he's still a trickster, but like, and now, like, Thor's caught on to, like, you're just going to trick me. It's okay. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like they both became better written in this one.
I also, you know, I want to just talk about Hulk really quick, in that Ruffalo's performance, his, you know what? We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about that, actually. We're going to talk about that later. You know what, then? We can't discuss more without going into some spoilers, and I don't want to ruin it for anything. I don't want to ruin any moments. You know, I only watched the first trailer myself, so I really hope that that's all we spoke about overall in our review here. The movie is making a ton of money, which does not equal quality by any means. You know, don't ever mistake me bringing up box office for me thinking that money equals quality, but it seems to be hitting with audiences the way no other Thor film has. And it had a huge opening weekend. I want to say it was like over $480 million, Ryan. Is that accurate?
It was. Yeah, it was right around, it was 480 or so, because they got 123 domestic, and then just under 4. So yeah, so it would be right around 480 or so.
That's a massive number. That is a massive number, especially because this is, you know, early November. You know, the holiday season has not even kicked in yet. So the fact that they pulled in so much on a Thursday non-holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fourth highest opening of the year. So, yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it's been over $200 million in U.S. alone.
I would assume that it's going to become number 5 come December 17th-ish.
Yeah.
Because that movie's just going to wreck house.
Yeah.
But when you look at that number 480, you kind of wonder, where does Last Jedi land on its opening four-day weekend? And I don't even know. Is it 600? Does it hit 600? Is it that crazy? Is it on that many screens? Are there that many screens to make that much money? But So I think I speak for everyone when I say, if you haven't gone and seen Ragnarok, I absolutely think you'll enjoy it. If you're unfamiliar with the director's work, prepare yourself. It's a different thing. It's, you know, we're not making Shakespeare here anymore. There are elements, but it's a different thing. And I do think it is for the better. I really enjoyed the hell out of it. Ryan, just your final thoughts on non-spoilery discussion?
Yeah, just please go see it. It's well worth the time.
Courtney?
Yeah, go see it, if not for just all of the man candy in the film. Just go.
Or the Kate Blanchett candy.
That's also different kind of candy.
Yeah, yeah. There was an even amount of Kate Blanchett, you know, slinkily walking around in her outfit. And then, you know, balanced off with Hemsworth losing his shirt for a solid 3 minutes. Melissa, what about you?
Same. Go see it. I can't, you know, stress enough how much fun and, you know, just enjoy.
Okay, guys, that's our feelings on it on the overall spectrum on Thor Ragnarok. Definitely phenomenal, in my opinion, a phenomenal addition to the MCU. Very, very happy that they let a director actually make his film, because I think they learned their mistake with Ant-Man. Not saying Ant-Man is bad, but Ant-Man could have been a lot. It could have been special. And I have a feeling that some people see that now, especially with Baby Driver winding up the way that it was. So, you know what? I'm actually happy he didn't have to do Ant-Man, because we wouldn't have got Baby Driver out of Edgar Wright. Okay, into spoiler territory. If you haven't seen the film, turn this off right now. This is your warning. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. And into spoiler territory we go. I didn't even want to bring up the fact that Anthony Hopkins appears in the film, even though, duh, he appears in the film.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking about how the film is obviously very comedic, but it does have these moments of dramatic weight. And pretty much 99% of them is when Anthony Hopkins is on screen. And yes, Melissa.
Well, I was just going to say, I actually loved the first part where you see him, where he's acting as him. And I thought that was brilliant. Yeah. Like, anytime they do that in these movies where it's said actor acting as how Loki would act as him, it's great. Like, when they did it with Steve Rogers, it was hysterical. And in this one, I just thought it was so good. Like, I would have loved to have found out, like, how Hopkins felt about having to play that.
So, now I have a question for you, Melissa.
Yes.
So, during that fake play, that play that they were watching, did you recognize anyone?
Well, I know Matt Damon was in it.
He was Loki.
Yeah, he played Loki. And
Sam Neill.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Neill was Odin, right?
Odin. Yeah.
And then Luke Hemsworth was Thor.
Yeah.
It's got everyone in there. Do you think that's a little distracting for an audience?
For me, it was only distracting because I only knew Matt Damon. So it was a little funny, but it didn't go on very long. So I didn't think it was like a big deal, but
Courtney, what do you think? Because I feel like you kind of nodded along with that.
Yeah, I think it's distracting. I think it's fun, but I do think it's distracting. I have to say, though, I think the only person that was recognized was Matt Damon, because Sam Neill's beard was so massive. I think me and Ryan were both like, ah! I think, you know, we both
that's
like,
probably about right.
Yeah, I think we both were like, oh, it's Sam Neill. And then I knew that I recognized the Hemsworth brother. And I assumed that's who that was. But I think the only one that was really recognizable, like Melissa said, was Matt Damon. And I think that does pull focus.
I think it does. Like, as much as I laughed at the moment, I don't know. I don't know if I'm a fan of them doing things like that, just because you don't need it.
In small doses, I was okay with it, just because it was like it was like a fourth wall break. Like, it was that very quick kind of, here it is, ha ha ha, let's move on. Like, it was fast enough. If it had kept going, it would have been too much.
Yeah.
Which in the moment's defense, every Stan Lee moment is that, you know, is that breaking of the fourth wall and winking at the audience, like, very, very hard. So, but I feel like I'm okay. All right, we got Stan Lee. Let's not keep that going. I really don't want to see that going forward. But I really enjoyed the Anthony Hopkins bits. Thor's reemergence after losing the eye, which was like, holy crap. I really don't want them to turn base on that. I want them to keep that. even though I think everyone's dying in the next several films. Anyways, timelines. Timelines are going to be Marvel-ass Marvel in a couple of years, guys. Yeah. So get used to it. I question a little bit the ending. Like the destruction of Ragnarok. The destruction of Asgard. I don't question it because I didn't think it was the right thing. Like, I kind of saw that coming way in advance. It was like, okay, she draws her power from Asgard. They're going to let Asgard get destroyed.
Yeah.
But it seemed like a very somber close on a film that was really funny for like 98% of the runtime.
But then you
and then it
like...
got like real somber.
But you get that balance with Korg being like, oh, you know, if the foundations are strong, you can rebuild it. Oh, wait, never mind. Like, he does a good job of, like, kind of being that relief of, like, you know, and then just remembering, like, Asgard's the people. So, like, you know, yeah, it's terrible, but it's okay.
Okay, but that's my thing then. And, you know, I'm asking because I don't know if I'm playing devil's advocate, but does the destruction of Asgard just kind of go ho-hum? Is it handled in a ho-hum sort of way, Ryan?
It's handled in a way that you knew it was coming. Like, it's handled in a way that they've set you up to understand that this is happening. You now have a, you know, basically a planet of refugees in a ship, which, based off where we leave with that one post-credit scene, that's a very tenuous situation. But it also begs the question, and I started to allude to this earlier, and I didn't want to do it. With Hela, if she truly draws her power from Asgard, if they truly believe that Asgard is the people, is she still out there? Because that's the problem with a lot of these Marvel villains, is it is that you're only in this movie, we're going to kill you by the end, and that's the end of that. We've seen a little bit of a turn this year, you know, with Spider-Man, we have the Vulture who's still around. Obviously, we're building, I think, something else there. But it's always been that problem with the Marvel movies, is that you don't get attached to the villain. Aside from Loki, they're really not going to hang around. So is there still that piece out there where, as long as the people are alive, she's alive? So there's a lot of things that they didn't that are kind of wrapped up in that end piece. And if that is the case, did the destruction really need to happen? So, you know, I don't know that it's handled in a cast off kind of a manner, but it happens very quickly when it does happen.
I wonder if it happened that way. So this way you don't necessarily connect to the fact that Asgard is the people, you know, power from the people kind of thing. So this way, if she does reappear in some form later on, because I mean, technically, like, the goddess of death, like, if death dies, then everybody would always be alive, right? Isn't that always like the how they handle that in books kind of thing? So like,
I don't think that she's the goddess of death in that sense. It's two different things. Oh, I know what you're thinking of. It's not that.
Okay. Well, maybe they just kind of glossed over the destruction of Asgard because they don't want you to necessarily get that concrete thought in your head, like, she can come back. And I don't know. It would be then weird if she comes back, because then you do worry, like, well, then why did we just destroy this place? I agree.
Right.
I agree with you guys.
I mean, I'm okay with them making a mistake, like, with them thinking that they vanquished the foe, and she actually survived, because, I mean, Courtney, I do think that we'll see Hela in the future.
Yeah, I hope we do. I mean, she seems super, super dangerous, so I'm all about seeing her in the future. But yeah, and in fact, it makes her more dangerous in the future if they've then destroyed Asgard and she comes back.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Because then what do you do? Because if Asgard is more than just a place, and it really, like, more than just, like, that saying in the film, which, also, we could be really overthinking this.
Yes.
You could be really overthinking this, and it could have been a one-shot villain, which sucks. Quite honestly, if they do that, I think it sucks. I would love to see her come back in a different capacity. But then again, we really don't know what the state of the MCU is after Infinity Wars 2. Melissa, yeah.
Okay, now I just have a question, because I'm not as well-versed in these comic books as, like, you guys are. So, wasn't there a whole thing with Thanos that he courts death or something like that?
Yeah, they make a mention towards that, actually, in the first in the first Avengers film, right?
Yes.
To invade Earth is to court death.
Court death. Yep.
Yeah, that I think that's just, honestly, in my wildest dreams, Josh Brolin and Cate Blanchett are hand in hand in Infinity War 2. I mean, honestly, if that is what they do, if they change the meaning of to court death and she is death, I would be very, very happy, because I do want to see a two-villain thing that is very threatening and not just a big splash page of everyone unleashing their powers on Thanos and him shrugging it off, which is what he should do. Yeah. Ryan, what do you think about that possibility?
I think that's an interesting possibility, because in the comics there is Hela, who is the goddess of death, and then, which really just means she's like a plague, almost, as it is. Like, she's just death ravaging over everything. And then there is actually the figure of death, whom Thanos courts regularly. Like, that's like why he does everything he does, is to give her souls, to get her approval. But she's a very silent figure. It's basically, you know, a skeleton in a robe, and, you know, there's not a whole lot to that character except that she always shuns him, basically. And so to see it as a pairing of villains who can take on everything, that would be incredibly interesting.
Yeah, I would really like to see that. One of my favorite moments of the film, Melissa, did you want to add something onto that? I'm sorry.
No, you can go ahead.
The Thor's awakening. I got distracted by it because we started talking about Asgard. After he loses the eye and he has that, you know, like, I'm not as strong as you. And Odin's like, no, you're stronger. That comeback with the lightning blasting out of him, like hammer or no hammer, was one of my favorite kick-ass moments in any of the Marvel films. What happens with that hammer? Did anyone notice at the end of the film without the hammer? Like, you were kind of like, your brain sort of is like, it'll be restored by the end of the movie. It wasn't.
No.
But
and for all intents and purposes, Thanos' ship basically pulls up to him at the end.
Well, because I think, like, you know, he kind of gets that, like, oh, you didn't need the hammer because you only needed it as a tool to focus, and now you don't need that anymore because now you can focus your power just on your own. It's almost like how, like, you know, in, you know, fantasy books you have, like, the wizard's staff being his instrument, but then if he, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the Schwartz. The Schwartz was within him the whole time. But I'm sorry, but I don't want Thor without a hammer for very long.
I think, though, maybe because now he has his power, like, maybe he can then create his own, but he knows he doesn't have to rely on it. Like, you know, now it can be a tool, like, to just fly or whatever.
To fly. Yeah. I guess he needs to fly. He still needs to fly, basically.
Guys, look. I need Cap to lift that hammer. Yes. I need the goddamn hammer to be back in the films. Right? That's what we need. So someone's got to smithy him up a ladder, a hammer, or something. But we need Mjolnir back in the mix.
Yeah.
I did like that part. Wait, I just wanted that part where he was with all the lightning. I was just like, this is a Diablo 3 character just unleashing his special right now.
Well, I'll tell you guys
he'll
this.
He'll recharge in 30 seconds.
Well, when the hammer was swinging around him, too.
You guys only watched the first trailer. There are images and there were trailers, and this was really interesting, I thought, when I was watching it, where he lands on that bridge and he only has one eye in the film.
Oh, really?
But in the marketing material, he has both eyes. Yeah, they put it back in, and I was like, because when I was watching that, I'm like, I kept going, how are they going to get the eye back? And then I think, oh, well, that was a clever bait and switch.
That's smart. I'm ignoring trailers of another film, so I won't even get into that whole thing.
I'm ignoring those trailers as well. I don't usually ignore trailers. Yeah. I'm ignoring those.
Courtney, I want to ask you about another thing that kind of I wasn't a big fan of. I know it was supposed to make her feel instantly vicious and dangerous, but the very, very non-caring, quick way that they off the Warriors 3, I mean, at least Hogan gets, like, a fight about it, but man, Volstagg and Fandral, who were played by Ray Stevenson and Zachary Levi, they're just discarded like in seconds. What did you think about that? Not that they ever used them to their advantage in the first two films, which I think was a massive mistake. But now they're gone, like just like that. And oh, by the way, does anyone else remember that Sif is a person? Where the hell was she this whole time?
Yeah, I don't know. I I thought it was surprising that it was dealt with that way. And I don't know necessarily what the purpose was of that.
I don't understand.
I didn't really get it either. That was one thing that I was kind of like, why did they do that? Like, what was the point in, not that we got a lot, like you said, of them from the first two films, but what was the point of them having us invest in them if they were just going to make it that kind of, you know, one and done?
And I even feel like it was worse because, like, Thor didn't even see their demise to make it, like, you know, more impactful for even just another character. Like, they were just off and, like, that was it. Like,
yeah,
nothing.
So here's, like, just a simple pitch, you know. Okay, so she's there. You can have them with Heimdall, you know, trying to usher out people and this and that. And then at the very end, make something happen that they have to distract. And I forget the big creature's name that destroys Asgard. Make it that the Warriors Three, like, they have to distract him in some way, and they know what this will be. And you have, like, a goodbye between all of them. And then they get, like, a proper hero send-off. With this, it just felt like cannon fodder.
Yeah.
Well, and even to the point where you have them with Scourge. Like, why are they there with Scourge? Like, they just, two of them just showed up there. That doesn't explain anything from him. That doesn't explain anything for them. It's just, I get if you need to have her lay waste to a bunch of people real fast to make a point. I don't know that it needed to be characters that we have an investment with.
But do we have that investment? Did they botch this from the very beginning? Because we have an investment, I think, because
we know of them.
Oh, Ray Stevenson. Yeah. I dig him from a lot of other things. Zachary Levi was hella charming in the short. I mean, they were used to the best effect in Dark World during the escape, which is the best part of that whole movie, the escape sequence for Thor and Loki getting out of Asgard.
Yeah,
you're right. They botched it from the beginning because I guarantee you there were plenty of people in those theaters who just were like, "Oh, look, those Asgard guys died." Like, that's the end of it.
Yeah,
valid. Yeah.
So that's just weird. I honestly have just no idea where Sif is.
So I could answer that. So they talked to Jamie Alexander, and apparently at the last minute they tried to bring her in. She had other commitments, and so I think actually it works to their advantage to keep her off of this one so that you have the potential to use her later in a different film.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm fine with that then, especially since now they crushed the whole, you know, Natalie Portman relationship thing.
Mm.
But him having his umbrella as the hammer was really great to see.
Yeah.
It was great to see that as a fan of the books. That was something I didn't get it at first. I was like, oh, they are doing that. It was really great. And what else? Anyone else want to talk? Because I don't know. Those were my issues with the film. But unfortunately, my issues with the film were all spoilers. So I didn't want to hint towards them or anything. Because I did have, you know, those were my things. And I'm okay with the dark finish. It just comes off as very, like, juxtaposed to everything you saw between, even though, you know, it is kind of funny with the guy yelling, like, "Are you gonna destroy us?" Like, thinking he really did something when they just let him.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, like, a sort of a funny thing to that. But then at the same time, you're seeing Asgard, which was, I don't know, the most interesting locale that they've had in these films. Not that they ever, like, really got into, like, the people who live there. I mean, we pretty much know, like, four people who live there, like, really well.
And we've killed all of them at this.
They're dead.
Yeah, yeah. But I was just, you know, there was some, maybe a little too jarring of a change in tone right there. And then the Warriors 3 thing, I just thought that was handled pretty crappily. I don't know if that's a contract thing, and they just had to do it, or if Marvel overall was like, "Look, we're not doing anything with these guys. We got to do this." I don't know.
Zachary Levi's character has been replaced, so
yeah,
like that was originally.
That's true. Yeah. And now Zachary Levi is going to be Shazam in the DC universe. Uh-huh. So who the hell knows what's going on?
Courtney, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say I loved the interaction with Loki and Thor and Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved that. I loved how, like, mind blown they were. And, you know, Loki comes out and he's like, "I was falling for 30 minutes.
I loved it because I felt like it set up a really good like thing just between Loki and Doc Strange of like who's better at the, you know, mystical arts or whatever you want to call it. Like, I liked it. Also, I liked it because you kind of got to see a little bit more of a progression of Doc Strange. Like, when you saw him in this movie, he was, like, in his garb. He, you know, I don't know if he called himself the Sorcerer Supreme, but he, like, had that authority about him that...
I don't think so, but yeah.
But he, like, had, you know, that air. So it was kind of cool.
He had a swagger.
Yeah.
He had a swagger to him. He's Doc Strange now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Swagger to him. I want to... Melissa, you were talking before about, you know, the flip-flopping that they've done with Loki. Like, I'm going to help. I'm really a trickster. That is Loki. Like, I'm okay with that. But I agree with you. Like, sometimes it's like, let it last for more than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So we get the effect a little better. But, you know, he did steal the Tesseract.
Yeah.
So guess what?
Not every other thing in that place.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, guess what? He stole the Tesseract. He probably stole the blue cube thing. He's obviously going to use that for his own means at a certain point. Maybe he tries to use it against everyone and then just gets wiped out because he made some mis. They make him get the kicked out of him a little bit in this film.
Yeah.
Like his jokes and his tricks don't work on a lot of people. I would have liked to have seen it work just for a moment on Valkyrie. But you know, even she like quickly defeats him in a knife fight, which she should, because that's sort of like her thing.
Yeah.
But then he is able to get the advantage with using his magic. I just really liked, again, Loki proves to be one of the best parts, maybe the best part, outside of Cap for me, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I really think that Hiddleston is just, without that villain being as effective as he has been, and being able to play both sides of the coin when applicable to the situation, I don't know how well these things work from the Avengers film and everything that Thor's been in. I don't know how well it works.
Yeah.
But hey, everyone thank Kenneth Branagh again.
I wish they would have done a little bit more with Valkyrie, because I felt like, you know, her character was the one that, like, she's a brand new character in this, but she's also like a new Asgardian. Like, it could have been really cool. And I feel like, I don't know. I feel like she fell a little flat. I don't know why.
She's not given enough. You don't care about her, really. I mean, we get that really great visual, like, back history of her, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But outside of that, she's just sort of stumbling around a bit and then flips a switch and, you know, she's kicking everyone's ass, which is great. The guy characters can do that in movies all the time and everyone accepts it. But if the thing is, going forward, she shouldn't be in a Thor film. She should be in a Hulk film.
Well, even to the
connection for that character.
Yes, and even to the point of that we're calling her Valkyrie. She was a Valkyrie, and yes, there is a character Valkyrie, but that's the name we're all calling her. That's not her name. Like, she didn't have a name in this film except for that, and then, you know, what is it? You know, 138 or whatever it was. Her
number. Yeah, yeah. Did you like that whole interaction, though, with her and Banner?
I did. I loved when she was like, you look familiar, you're familiar, or whatever. Like,
yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, I think it sets up a really interesting, what I would consider like a love triangle between, like, Black Widow, Banner, Hulk, and her. Because I think she's almost more drawn to Hulk than Banner. So it's almost like this, you could play an interesting dynamic with the four of those characters, really.
It's like the Lois, you know, it's like the Lois Lane Superman thing, where it's always like, I think she's more in love with the Superman than ever, which she could be with Clark Kent, but she understands that Clark Kent is simply just a mask that he wears. So maybe for this character going down the line, they could play with the idea that she sees Banner as the mask that he wears, and he's really the Hulk.
Interesting.
Courtney, what did you think about Valkyrie?
You know, I think if you're going to have a Valkyrie in a movie, you need to make her as badass as possible. Knowing quite a bit about that mythology, I just didn't think that they let her shine at all. And like Ryan said, giving her no identity was like kind of a bummer to me. It was a bummer. Yeah. Like, she should have a name. And I loved her costume in the movie, but I mean, that's like a Valkyrie is so much more than what they made her out to be costume wise. Even like, you know, in the fight scenes, she's strong, but she's not what a Valkyrie should be.
Do you think that there should have been something that distracts Thor from the main title fight against Hela? And it's just, I feel like she should have stepped onto the field basically in a very dramatic way, and that Hela zeroes in on her and says, "I know you." You know, like I would have liked that moment to have been like a Hela, you know, Valkyrie rematch.
Yeah.
In the sense that like she remembers her.
And like call her out by name and like then actually make her like a thing. Yeah.
Make that. I really thought that was going to happen. I thought that was going to be like when Thor was trying to figure out everything else of saving people and getting people off the, you know, thing that would happen. And then eventually he would, you know, jump into the fray as well. And, you know, they would learn together, which they did, you know, learn together like, okay, well, this is what we have to do. I just would have liked for Valkyrie to have taken on Hela a little more, just it would have been just been more, what's what I'm looking for, more pointed out that like the two of them are facing off, and again giving the weight of Valkyrie's character that Hela actually remembers her.
Yeah.
When she just lays people down without even thinking twice and doesn't remember anyone, like it doesn't matter to her, but this person she remembers, you know.
Especially since we get that moment where Loki, like, you see all of her sisters slain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they show us that if they weren't going to give us the payoff at the other side of it?
Yeah, there should have been a lot more punch to that. So now this is where you can now look at the director and go, well, that's not really what he's good at.
Right.
So he may have been too distracted on some other things, and these other little moments of dramatic punch that would have made it, that would have actually put it over the top for me above Cap, that's where it doesn't hit. Because for Winter Soldier, those moments are struck.
Yeah.
You know, those moments of realization, which it's kind of a similar situation now that you think of it. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, parallels you can put with the Hela and Valkyrie and Steve and Bucky. You know, not a lot, but you know, there's some. Those moments of recognition would have been really powerful, I think, especially for making Valkyrie feel more important. Right now, she just seems like a friend that Hulk made. And by the way, she has some ties to Asgard and she was able to help out. And, you know, now she's part of our larger universe. So let's see what they do with her going forward. If it's like all the other women characters that they've had, they won't do anything. But, you know, let's see what they do, because seriously, of all the things that Marvel has done well, how the hell did DC beat them to the first female, you know, hero film? How the hell did that happen?
I mean, I felt like it was going that way with Sif, and then, I don't know, it just kind of, like, took a really Sif, back seat.
Sif, whatever. I mean, yes, I would have loved to have seen, like, Sif do a little bit more, but they have Scarlett Johansson, the highest-grossing, highest-paid female actress in all the world, playing Black Widow, and she's been in numerous films right now, and she's always great. This can't be tough to figure out. Honestly,
like
a Black Widow film cannot be tough to figure out.
She plays the partner so well in so many of the other films. Like, it would have been interesting to see it, but maybe they haven't figured out how to write her as her own star. I don't know why or how. But
that's like that's a massive failing on their part, though.
Yeah.
She's had her own comic for years.
Right. It's a different genre than we've seen. Like, they figured out political intrigue. They figured out the comedy, they figured out the science fiction. A spy thriller is not that much, is not beyond the pale for them. It's not beyond the scope. They can get there.
Yeah.
Why we haven't done it yet is, yeah, you're right. It's beyond me.
And they've touched on it. They touched in that genre on Winter Soldier, okay?
Yes.
I'm not going to say it's, you know, 3 days, you know, 3 days of the Condor or anything like that, but like, you know, it touched on it. It had some DNA from that. And that is their biggest fail. Behind not being able to make more than one or two, maybe three appealing villains, you know, that like stick to you a little bit. I think that they're, I guess really, no, their biggest failing is that they haven't capitalized on the numerous interesting female characters they had. But whatever, you have Scarlett Johansson as, like, she's making spy, bad spy female films with other studios. Like, why can't you make a good one?
Yeah. It's
weird. Really, really weird.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any final thoughts that they want to do before we wrap this up? Courtney?
Well, I'm just going to say Jeff Goldblum because we didn't talk about him.
Oh, God, we didn't. You're right.
Yeah, he's my first crush ever since Jurassic Park. I love Jeff Goldblum and anything he's in. I mean, I love him.
He's so good.
Yeah.
The Grandmaster was a blast. It was an absolute blast.
I like that they kept him around too, because like I know they've done fun stuff with him in the animated series that they have on Disney XD. So like it would be really interesting to see if he ever comes back.
Yeah, I think he will.
Well, and he's, you know, there's that whole, here's the comic book side, there's that whole Elders piece where the Collector is one, the Grandmaster is one, they all have these kind of names. So there's this interesting connection there. So I do think they're going to keep him around, and there's a great interplay there that could be had. So, but he did just a fantastic job with it.
Yeah, I think he fits well with Taika Waititi's kind of, like, the feeling is right. He was the right person and the right fit with Taika Waititi for this film.
I don't think that character works in almost any other, like, introductory setting. Now that you've introduced him, you can plug him anywhere and everywhere, yeah. Like, because we're familiar with it now. But to try to introduce the character as played by Jeff Goldblum, mm-hmm. in the manner as he did, that would have been a tough trick. Because I mean, remember how weird people reacted at first to Benicio del Toro's Collector? They were like, what's this? He looks so weird. I don't understand this. And then he was fine. But like, if we're making scales, the lower scale of weird is the Collector, mm-hmm. and right near the top of the office building is Jeff Goldblum in virtually anything.
Yeah.
So, Melissa, final thoughts before we call it a night?
Nope, that was all. That was really good.
All right, Brian Wilson.
You know what? We talked briefly about the Hulk, but giving the Hulk the ability to actually speak and actually carry on dialogue and actually have thoughts that weren't puny god or Hulk smash was really great to see. Coming from a history where I really love the Hulk, I really love the comics, to see more of that actual character come out and shine was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm sorry, go ahead, Melissa.
No, I was going to say that's a good point because, yeah, we didn't really also talk about like how Banner then got really scared about the fact that, you know, if Hulk comes out again, he might, you know, Banner might then disappear. Like, I thought that was really poignant because, you know, like, especially if they're going to be facing Thanos, like, the Hulk needs to come out, you know, at a certain point. Like, we're going to need him. And I think that was really a great little, like, just quiet line that was delivered, but it's, like, in the back of your head now.
No, well, he already turned into him after saying that line. He turned into the Hulk at the end of the movie.
But then did he turn back into Banner?
No.
No, yeah. He did not.
So now's the question.
Now you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do with a Hulk that can't turn back?
You put him in a long black wig.
Tony and the Gypsy, that's what you get.
Hulk, four letters. Cher, four letters.
There you go. Me.
Make the connection.
You're Have you ever seen him in the same photo at the same time?
Not I. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us tonight. I hope you enjoyed our look at Thor Ragnarok. And what do we got? Coco now in a couple of weeks. So we're going to be discussing Coco, Pixar's next film, in only a short couple of weeks. Not a whole lot of word on that film yet, which makes me nervous as hell.
They keep putting out trailers.
Well, it's really a double feature if you look at it, because we have the Olaf's holiday adventure thing, and then we have Coco. So it's a 2-for-1.
Coco is very short, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I also heard a song from that Olaf's Frozen Adventure thing yesterday, and it was terrible. So we'll see.
In my opinion, they have not had a good song that was tied into the Frozen universe since the movie, and they've done a couple of things since then.
Yeah.
So we will see how that goes. We'll hope for the best and see what else. Actually, just really quick, this week, Cars 3 comes out on 4K. And if you would have asked me however many months ago, would this be something you're going to buy on opening week? I probably would have slapped you with a hamburger if I would have had a hamburger near me. guess what? I am going to be picking it up. I kind of really want to watch it again. Mm-hmm. I hadn't picked up Pirates, though, because I can just watch the first one. So I can also watch Rocky 3 instead of watching Cars 3. But, you know, hey, we all have to, you know, we all have to bend our own rules here and there. So this episode of Disney Magic Hour. Oh, wait a minute. One final note. Sorry. So many final notes. Thank you to everyone who joined us for our Halloween horror. Hello, Halloween Horror Nights over at Universal Studios. We had a really great turnout, and we have ideas for next year, and we are going to be discussing them. We have to discuss them with others first, and we're going to see what we're going to have. But no matter what, we are going to be doing something again next year. And what if I told you The Conjuring is probably going to be there? And what if I told you that Stranger Things is also possibly going to be there? Come on down to Florida, October, guys. So this episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe. Visit the experts over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team get you ready for your adventure. Also, huge love and thanks to KJ, and congratulations on everything that you're doing. Can't wait to see you at Festival of the Arts, and can't wait to get my Shining poster painting in the mail. I bought it. You are not listening to There You Are right now, but if you were, I would tell you to head on over to soundcloud.com/PogoMix to check out all that he offers. You can find us at lastgenpodcast.com. We are on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, we are Disney Magic Hour. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. Melissa, where can everyone find pictures and support?
Pictures on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And you can help support the show if you go over to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour and help keep us going.
And thank you, Alvin Torres, for actually pledging today, for supporting us over on that. And what are we doing this week? What movie? I mean, I'm on the road. I don't know if I'll be there, but what movie are we watching this week, Melissa? Do you know?
I believe we're still going back to our animated classics. We had done Snow White, so next up is...
Pinocchio?
Pinocchio.
Yeah, Pinocchio. So we'll get a release date, a screening date for that, and everyone who is a DMH Patreon PA, production assistant, you join us on our little secret page. If you want to join and be part of it, head on over, as Melissa said, patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour. Help keep the lights on for us and everyone. Ryan, where can everyone find the Main Street Gazette?
At MainSTGazette.com, MainSTGazette on Instagram and Twitter, and search for us on Facebook. You'll find our page.
And Ryan, you just got back from the big, a Disney cruise. And we're, you know what? Yeah. If you don't mind, we'll talk about that next week when we're all in a little more of a normal setting.
Absolutely.
How's that sound?
Sounds like a good plan.
Great. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Courtney?
Yes?
Someone who works at the Morocco Pavilion is from Casablanca. I just wanted you to know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fancy as hell.
That's a good bit of information going into next week.
Cha-pow! All right, guys. I'll see you all later. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Pete. Pogo says goodnight. See you guys later. Bye.